Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure for me to talk to you. I've been working a lot on gender issues in the legal profession in these past few years, and so it's very difficult for me to be brief. I know so much, and you may have seen that I've edited that very big book on gender and judging together with my friend Gisela Shaw. What I want to do this morning in this session, which is centered around equality, diversity, and legitimacy, to give you mainly information about empirical research we've done in Germany on women's careers in the judiciary. This is the cover of the report we've submitted. It shows, so the name of the report was about women in leading positions of the judiciary in my federal state, North Rhine-Westphalia. It was mainly qualitative research, but we, of course, also took all the statistics which were available. And these are the three presiding judges at the regional court of the city where I live. And I like to show the picture here, because what has happened, these two women, she's just got a child at 43, and this one is just expecting one at 43, and that was completely unexpected for the judiciary. And this nicely shows that women's life in the judiciary may be a little different from men's life. So, what about the career in the judiciary? I have quite a lot of information on the slides to help you understand, and also the interpreters have said that it would make their job easier, but don't forget to look at me. So we have a career judiciary like in other civil law countries, and entry is at approximately 28 or 32. The youngest ones are 26. So what are the prerequisites? You need the two German state examinations in law. Everybody who wants to practice one of the classical legal professions, this is advocacy, notariate, and judiciary, and also the higher civil service, they need this examination, which gives the qualification for judicial office. And you need high marks in that examination. You have to be amongst the 20% of top scorers, and if there are few positions available, the market changes, sometimes there are more positions, sometimes less, then you may even have to be amongst the top 10%. There is no difference in the marks between women and men in the second examination. They don't do better, but they're not less good than men. It's just the same. So the recruitment procedure is by structured interviews and assessment centers. And we know that assessment centers work for women, so the quota of newly hired or taken in women judges is a little higher than the quota of those who do the second state examination, and is also a little higher than those who apply. So this is good news, I think, and shows that women have their chances, and if you look at these 55%, you can well come to the conclusion that we are moving towards a situation you have in Belgium and you have in France. We haven't yet moved so far. In Germany, the first woman was admitted to the judiciary in 1922. Women in Germany got the right to vote in 1918, and you heard yesterday that you always have the connection between the right to vote and being getting the right to be admitted to the judiciary. And then at first it needed a long time for the figures to rise, and it was a question of the higher participation of women in higher education that figures started to rise. And now you see we have a very fast increase, have had a very fast increase in recent years, and we've moved now to 40% of women in the amongst judges, and with the prosecution the figure is even higher, though it started later there. in the advocacy, the figure is lower. And as they're more on probation, that means in the first 3 years of service, you can well understand that the figures will continue to rise. Women love the judiciary. It gives them a high status, it gives them high prestige. The question we started to discuss yesterday was, will that remain the high prestige, because it had been an issue. Does the feminization of a profession lead to a loss in prestige and maybe to lower income possibilities? There is no income discrimination because there are scales for the income. It's a secure position. No career steps are necessary for the high prestige. You have the social security of the civil service. You're entitled to a wonderful pension, when you get older, this is a good prospect. And you have any possibility for maternal and parental leave, which is difficult if you practice as an advocate. You have the possibility to work part-time. And after some time, you have a manageable workload. The question is, then, what about women in leading positions? The research we've done was commissioned because, well, the old picture, what you've heard yesterday and seen, is that there are not so many women in leading positions. And the argument for asking us to do the research was not to have a greater pool of talent. Well, they have the pool of talent because they only take the top scorers. The argument was that they said, now we are in the demographic change, we are facing a demographic problem, maybe we don't get enough people, enough applicants for leading positions with this feminization of the profession. And I suspected that they wanted to get, as a result, women don't want to have a career, and that they had asked us to do it for that reason. We do have in Germany a problem with school teachers. At primary school, a third of the leading positions, of the headmaster, mistress positions, is open because people don't apply. Now, what about women in leading positions? This is about my federal state, North Rhine-Westphalia, and it shows you the German glass ceiling. I don't have data for all of Germany. And you only have to look at this column. Well, we have these different jurisdictions in Germany, but 3/4 of the judges are in the ordinary jurisdiction. And there you see, this is the local court of first instance, and there you have almost 51% of women. At the regional court of first instance, the figure is quite much lower, it's 42%. And this is the appeal court, there it is 33%. And now, the glass ceiling is here. This is about the presiding judges and presidents at the regional court of first instance, and that is 20%, and at the appeal court, it's less than 17%. And the income group and the career level of the presiding judges here and of the judges at the appeal court is the same. So why is the figure lower here than there? And, well, there's an easy explanation. To be a presiding judge is in some way connected to leadership. And so the idea of leadership in a somewhat hidden sense is connected to maleness. What are the career steps which are necessary, and what are the factors which disadvantage women? This was what we were supposed to find out, or what we wanted to find out. Well, the formal requirements are you have to do 3 years on probation, then you get your regular position. And there, that is the first instance where an opaque element comes in, because the allocation is influenced by the president of the regional court of first instance. That person is the one who does the assessment. That person is the one who will tell you, oh, look, there's a nice position there. Please apply for that position. You have to apply, but they tell you to apply, or they will tell you, not to apply. Of course, you may say, I don't want this position, I will wait, but it's not really good for you not to do it. It may be a little risky. After 5 years, then you are eligible for what we call the third state examination. The third state examination, I'll give you more information about that. That's a time of probation at the appeal courts. You have to be there for 8 months and will work there under supervision. There are legal regulations about that. And you get regular assessments every 4 years, also legally regulated. And you get a special assessment on application. And you need these special assessments that your marks go up high enough to get a leading position. And these special assessments are something very tricky because they're only done when you have applied. And again, they will tell you, apply or don't apply. And if you have applied without asking or discussing it with your president, he may say, oh, you should take back your application. And the assessment is only done when all the applications are there. So they know who has applied, and then, of course, you can do the assessment the way you want to have it. And they've been frank about it. That's a method of steering the process of who gets where. And then you get administrative experience. And this, again, is an unregulated field which has disadvantages for women. And of course, if you want to have a career, there are informal requirements. The requirements are mobility, visibility, networks, and connections. I'll tell you more about it. Well, a career, as everywhere, cannot really be planned. You can do something for your career, but you cannot plan it. As I said, you don't apply without being asked. The president, the leader, will give you what you call in the Anglo-American world, the tap on the shoulder, and then you do your application. And the way your personality is constructed in the court where you work is done in coffee rounds. In the courts, there are coffee rounds or lunch tables, and there people are discussed. Are they good? How do they perform? And so the farmer you get there is a clear career factor. What matters too is good looks, good behavior, being a amenable person, but they all told us, yes, the performance, the work matters. And they would never doubt the quality of a colleague. That was very interesting. I heard of no one where they said, this was just a favor that he'd gone up or she gone up. They all said the quality must be all right. And a career factor is to take on additional tasks, for example, training young lawyers and work in the professional government bodies. And as everywhere, luck matters, to be the right person in the right place at the right moment in contact with the relevant persons. But the formula is very easy: to be visible and to be asked. And the question is, how do you get visible? In a sense, it's connected to the coffee rounds and how your personality is constructed. We've called in our report a paternalistic and reproductive system. Why paternalistic? Well, there is a strong position of the key persons, and the key persons are the presidents in the courts of first instance, less the appeal courts, because that's for the latter stages of the career. The courts of first instance. And when we did our research, we had 19 courts of first instance in the ordinary jurisdiction in my federal state, and there were 18 men there and one woman. Right now it's 3 women and 16 men, but overall, we checked the figures for 15 years, there has been very little change in these key positions, and there are very few women around, and the overall percentages, men versus women, has not changed. And important are also the judges with personal functions, or again, there tend to be many men. So the way the system works, it has adaptive mechanisms to what we call the traditional male model of justice. Justice was a male enterprise. And the molding to that male model of justice starts with the two examinations we have to take. At university, we still have only 15% of female law professors. And this is a development of recent times. So the socialization at the law faculties is done by men. We are just doing research into the situation of women in the legal academy, and it's very interesting to see how that system functions. Then the third state examination, that is that time of probation you do after about 8 years of practice, is a kind of further ordeal. It's in a sense what I call humiliating because you have to work under supervision again. And people are 35 to 40, and at that age you rather want to be independent or not work under supervision. And they all told us we don't get feedback when we are there, and particularly no positive feedback. It's strenuous, long working hours. Mobility, again, is required. You have to go to the appeal court, which may be far away. And these factors are, of course, adverse to family functions, and that means particularly for women. And then there's the bottleneck for the positions with administrative functions. You can only get into administrative functions when the president asks you, would you like to be one of those who do administrative functions? And there's no regulation at all, so the president chooses the person he thinks is good for it, and there we have this principle. This is my favorite cartoon. I've been looking for someone like you. And again, with the administrative functions, you have long working hours, less flexibility, which may make it difficult for you to also want to perform administrative functions. The aim of this system and the underlying ratio is to get homogeneity in the judiciary. And this is really what we can say about the judiciary, that it is a very homogeneous body. This is good in a sense. Of course, it makes a very, in a sense, reliable institution. But if the homogeneity is geared to a traditional, maybe a little old-fashioned model, then you have to question it. Okay. So the disadvantages for women, when you look at the side of the organization, what does the organization do with the women? And there was one factor we found very striking. Women and men have the same marks when they enter the judiciary. And suddenly, once they are there, they get lower marks in their regular assessment. How can that happen? A fortnight ago, I've done a further training with judges in our National Academy for the Judiciary. And then they said, well, it's very simple, because particularly in the first years, women take time off, they get children, and they take parental leave. And so if there are less time, that makes it understandable that the marks are lower. And I said, sorry, don't you evaluate the quality of the work? Well, and the question is, who is visible and asked to take over administrative functions? And visibility is closely connected to be there, to be present, to sit in the coffee rounds, at lunch table. And there's another drawback with the third state examinations. There are too few positions for part-timers. And what I found critical, but they work on it now, it is very unusual to do it later in your life. After 45, it's something you simply don't do. And so why not take the third state examination at 50 or 55 and have a late career in life? And as you have seen, as the bulk of women is at the local court of first instance, there you are not visible. that much about visibility. Because the local court of first instance may be far away from the regional court, and the president of the regional court is a supervisor, the one who does the assessments, so there is a clear barrier between the local and regional courts of first instance. I called it a women's trap. Of course, work there is very nice if you want to combine family and work, because you only have to go to your office, to the law courts, when you have your sessions. Otherwise, you can work from home. There's also a kind of horizontal segregation. That means fields where women compete with each other and more male fields, but I can't give you clear data about that. A definite career stop is to be a mother. Lots of young women told us that when they got pregnant, the president said, "Oh, how wonderful, congratulations. Now let's look where there is a nice position for you, where you can have an easy life with your child and with your work." And some said, "Well, we wanted to have a career." And so this much about the nice, caring old man. They're really nice. They want to do good. And they simply, they had to become aware of what works there. And many women opt for part-time occupation. A third of the judges at the local court work part-time. And of course, part-time occupation is a women's occupation. 85% of the part-timers are women. And part-time work is, as in all fields, considered to be a kind of part-time devotion. And in a field where total commitment is required, part-time devotion is not what makes you desirable for career positions. And so, gender stereotypes are working. The young women told us we are called mummies once we have children, the mummies. And there, of course, are also individual career impediments. Women, men too, but it holds true for more women in the traditional pattern of life, have time constraints due to family work and family obligations. You may know that Germany had a very strong culture of a male breadwinner model, and it's taken us many efforts to open up that model, and it's only a development of recent years. And then the long hours working culture for career positions, which takes a lot of your time you may wish to spend on other things, the required mobility. Maybe there is a lack of support that was also reported. Does your partner or husband support you? Do your maybe parents support you? Or with elder children, do your children support you? And we have empirical evidence about career motivation. We had a survey about the career motivation, and women and men said, what they said was they have an equal career motivation. But what we know, and Bourgeois mentioned that yesterday, women trust less in their competencies. That's in the psychological literature called lower self-efficacy. And they trust less in that they can be successful. And that's called lower perceived efficacy. And we found something, another very interesting factor. We evaluated the placement proposals for career positions. So if people apply, then a judge takes the applications, does a kind of formal evaluation, and then they make a placement proposal. And from these placement proposals, we could take that women only apply for higher positions when they have had the relevant grades. You have to move up with your grades in the judiciary all the time, and you only get number one when you have arrived at the stage where you can become a court president. It's a peculiar system. They don't say one is for very good performance. Very good performance for the juniors is 5, and one is for people who can become court presidents. They only apply when they've had their relevant grade for a longer time than their male colleagues. So why that? Is it because of the lower self-efficacy, or is it also because they are later asked to apply and later get that tap on the shoulder? Well, as we talk about difference here, about diversity here, so in what way does diversity matter in the German judiciary? Do women make a difference? This will be a topic which we will discuss in many other papers today. We get on slippery ground here. Well, do women make a difference as leaders? You have to consult the management literature about it. I won't say anything about that. I have no empirical evidence. Do women make a difference in the way they lead the proceedings? This is about communication, and this is about, do they create a nicer atmosphere at law courts? We had empirical research of the late 80s, and I've asked quite a lot of judges over time about it, and yeah, in essence of that was, yeah, women have a friendlier way, etc., etc. You may doubt it. I put a question mark. But the third question, do women make a difference in their decisions? And does here come in a different life experience which leads to different decisions? Yesterday we heard the sentence, les femmes ont des compétences autres que les hommes. Do they? What we can say is, and this is a result from sociology of organizations, that people get a primary identity as professionals. And taking into account that strong assimilation process we have in legal education and in the training to a neutralized image of the judge, what you call in France the ideal of universalism, that makes you clear that the strong molding processes take place. So in the literature of the sociology of organizations, you find the sentence that individuals are more likely to be transformed by institutions than vice versa. And comparing civil law countries with common law countries, we have to say that now also looking at Germany, there's less space for an individual swing in the application of the law than in common law countries. So this was a difficult question to ask. Although there are always expectations when there are women at law courts, and I remember when Susanne Beer, who's here and who will speak tonight, was elected to our Federal Constitutional Court, people uttered expectations, oh, will she make a difference? Well, will women make a difference? Gender issues are hidden in many areas of law. But the question is, who takes the gender aspects into account? It may be men too. Who uses gender arguments and who asks the woman question? We asked the judges in our survey, and they all said, we don't discriminate, and of course there is no difference in what we do. We are objective, we are neutral. But then it turned out that gender may matter in family law when it comes to alimony. So these are no hard facts I can report. This is what we can rather call anecdotal evidence. Men tend to be a little more generous, is my conclusion, considering alimony, if women ask for alimony, than women judges. That can be a very easy equation. A working woman may think, well, that woman could work herself. It may work the other way around in custody cases. We have a very interesting experience in criminal law. In the early 90s, we had empirical research, do women pass more lenient sentences in criminal cases? And the result was no. But I have a course with a colleague at our National Academy for the Judiciary, and we've given fake files, that was for an experiment on the anchor factor, fake files to the judges, and our sample was 250 people in the end, and with these files, the women had more lenient sentences. That is a, well, okay. Well, in administrative law, it may matter. As some judges mentioned, that women may be more generous in asylum cases, having a wider heart. But it's never, you can never rely on it. You can never say, well, it's a woman, so she will decide that way. And we only had one very clear case. That was in social law when we went to our social appeal court in my federal state. And they said, when we had the discussion, has Viagra to be paid by the sickness insurance? The men decided differently from women. And at this point, I would rather also like, do men make a difference? Because we have that wonderful movie from Claude Chabrol, which I like to use in lectures. We have terrible decisions old men at our highest federal court have passed in the 50s about men as head of the family connected to notions of natural law. And you may remember that in the 70s, we have discussed personal biases and inherent understanding, what we call Vorverständnis in German, preconceived opinions. Give me just another 2 minutes about, so what can we do to have the equal representation of women on all stages? What about equal opportunities in that sense? In Germany, we have a very extensive equal opportunity legislation. At universities, there's a lot of money now involved in equal opportunities. Since 89, in my federal state, we've had a soft quota regulation, which the European Court has considered to be all right. And we have equal opportunities officers in all public institutions with more than 20 employees. But in our interviews, only one case was mentioned where the quota had mattered. What do they do? Well, I told you how they do with the assessments. And when they have the assessments, then they try to find differences in the assessments. There is not much in the assessments, but they have a funny process of looking deep into the assessment. They call it Ausschärfen, Ausschöpfen. And of course, there could be competition claims. And there are lots of competition claims in the judiciary. We had competition claims about almost all top positions in recent years, but never the quota was used there. And judges are also used to fight assessments, to take assessments to court. So this is very amazing. So what is the role of the equal opportunities officers then? In 60 of our interviews, which were circling around the careers in the judiciary for women, hindrances and factors which help their careers, none of our interview partners mentioned the equal opportunities officer. When we asked about her, they said, oh, she does a wonderful job. But of course, we are not discriminating. It's nice to have her. She's helpful. And again, also the question, who's nominated as equal opportunities officer? Has she been asked? Obviously. And we also have cases, and that's a very difficult part, where equal opportunities officers suffered drawbacks through their positions. I can't go into details here. So all these equal opportunities, regulations, institutions we have are on one hand side a kind of decorum. But if they don't, in the judiciary, they don't work on an individual basis, but they have a high symbolic importance because it keeps the subject alive. And there is a high awareness that equal opportunities have to be there and something has to be done for women. What has to be done? Well, as a result of our report, there's a working group now. Do we have to have gender trainings? Well, gender trainings is a very difficult field. It has the smell of ideological re-education. Oh, I don't like gender trainings, very difficult. Of course, you can do good ones, but you may meet a very hostile atmosphere. People get further education on gender aspects of personal work. The question is how thorough it is done, and of course all this about family-friendly working conditions, childcare. What has what has led to a kind of change in awareness is the Father's Month we have now in Germany. So with the parental leave, you can have an extra Father's Month, and if the fathers don't take it, the women can't get it in addition. And meanwhile, more than 30% of the young fathers, and we also see the effect in the judiciary, take these Father's Month. And of course, that makes people think. Are the stereotypes vanishing? Here I have a very nice story. I had written an editorial for our state journal for judges and prosecutors in January, very recent story. And the editor in charge wrote to the colleague who'd commissioned that article with me, here was the corrections for the editorial, the style of which strikes me as masculine and harsh rather than feminine and gentle. Never mind. And she wrote to me, take it easy, take dynamite. So, well, the end is, can we really achieve equality? And that's the point. Isn't it the squaring of the circle in a society based on competition? That was a point we had started to touch yesterday. And I want to leave you with that question and think about it.